Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of Her with Amina Brown. And, you know, we've been a little bit of time of me being here in the living room with you all, just chatting you and telling y'all my business. But I am happy to bring guests into the living room. That's what the living room is for. You all, we're here. We're guests together. But we are bringing a guest, and I am so excited, y'all. We have with us licensed psychologist, professor, poet, author, president-elect of the American Psychological Association, and author of Homecoming, Overcome Fear and Trauma to Reclaim Your Whole Authentic Self. Dr. Tama Bryant is here with us. Dr. Tama, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I love the introduction. I can hear the poetic flow.
It never goes away. You do other things, right. But it never That's leaves it. You.
It's in.
Dr. Tama, I'm so excited that you are joining us, y'all. This book right here. Sometimes, let me tell y'all, sometimes a book that can bring healing to you upsets you. And those books also have their place. But sometimes a book that can bring healing to you, like you start reading it and you already feel like you're breathing a bit easier. And that's what your pages felt like to me. And so I hope as we talk about this, Dr. Tama, that folks who have not gotten their copy of Homecoming can make sure that they do, because it is a good breath for all of us to take.
Thank you. I'm so grateful to hear that. And that really was the intention. I think some people have this false idea that like telling people off or dismantling people is what healing looks like. And we have enough dismantling. We have enough of the violation and the assault. So our healing, you know, should be an invitation to something deeper and more honoring of who we are, even as it stretches us, but still holds us.
Yeah, I love that. Now, I want to start with a very important question. It's a very serious question that we need to talk about, which is snacks, Dr. Tama. Snacks, it's very important. Could be a part of our healing journeys is snacks.
Absolutely.
So when I talk to our Her with Amina community, I always say to them, this podcast is sort of my vision of what my living room has been like, where my girlfriends and I gather together. And sometimes we had enough money to charcuterie board. And sometimes we just had enough money to have some unfinished hummus that happened to be sitting in the fridge. And my girlfriend brought a bell pepper she had kind of cut a little bit off of. And we just combined our little things together.
You know.
So if you're in this situation with your friends or your family, whoever you like to gather with, what's your snack that you typically bring to the space?
Yes. So first I was thinking individual snacks. So just my regular snack by myself to myself are almonds. I am the almond queen.
That's a good
and
one.
And hot green tea is my soothing blanket. If I was going somewhere, I'm not going to just bring almonds. So.
But when people love you, you could. Yeah. You could.
That's true. That's true. I could show, and they would appreciate my almond bag.
Now, let me ask you a quick question about these almonds, Dr. Tama. So is this roasted, unsalted?
Yes.
Are you?
No,
what
no,
are the
no.
Vibes?
We're roasted. We're not unsalted over here.
Okay.
We need a little kick to it.
Little flavor. I like it. Okay. And if you were in a situation where you had to bring your snack, but also maybe other people going to share, then what would be the vibes?
Yes. So a snack wise, I think when you said hummus, that often resonates. And since I've been living in California, which has been some time, I've gotten into avocado and guacamole. So we could definitely roll with that as well.
That's always a good choice. I'm going to admit, Dr. Tama, because I feel like this is a safe space, that I really don't get along with avocados. And I have a few friends that they try to love me in spite of, you know, they're just
in spite of. That's all right. I grew up in Baltimore. In Baltimore, we didn't eat avocado. So I'm good with that. It's a late arrival.
It's like if it's in a guacamole for some reason, I can handle it there. But my friends that like slice it up and they just salt and pepper.
Oh, yeah.
It's new for me. But now that you're saying this, Dr. Tama, I'm wondering to myself, Because I live in Atlanta. So I'm wondering to myself if a part of that is location.
Yeah, you just didn't grow up with it.
And that the avocados where you live might taste better.
True. That is true.
Than what we're getting down here.
And, really, it really comes down to the seasoning, too. What you shake on there.
Mm-hmm. Come on, what you shake on there. Maybe that's what avocado needs. Maybe when I had it, it wasn't seasoned right. Something.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so glad we had this
needed
talk.
Needed a little something.
So, Dr. Tema, in addition to your work as a psychologist, you are also a poet. I find that so wonderful and fascinating. And maybe it's also personal for me that I'm a poet, too. But what role has poetry played in your work and in your life? How do you see that foundation sort of playing a role even in what you're doing today?
It's so important because a lot of times when we're in need of healing, we have been silenced, right? And so our stories haven't been told. They've been diluted. We've had to like read the script of what somebody else wanted us to say. So a part of our healing is getting my words back, right? And reclaiming my voice. And so I have used poetry to heal both personally and with clients. So with clients, I can use it individually with people receiving kind of homework assignments to write on a theme that came up in session or writing in session. And I've also done poetry therapy groups where the entire therapeutic process is centered around reading poetry, reflecting on poetry, writing our own and sharing our own. And I can remember once at a poetry coffee house in Boston where I used to live. After I shared a piece, and it was the first time someone said to me, I feel like I was just in therapy. And so I think it's a wonderful vehicle to bring healing beyond the walls of like the private practice office. And I will even say a lot of times in poetry spaces, that healing voice is needed because sometimes in open mic, it can just be like a series of like horrible experiences. With no breath and no life. And I'm glad people are getting it out. But for those who are receiving it, it can be some nights, depending on just who signs up, it can be a dry space. And so that combination of speaking truth, but truth with breath.
Oh, that breath is so important. And I recall this about the open mic. You could have some nights where that almost felt like this church or sort of spiritual space, right? Yeah. And then you could have some nights where you were kind of like, okay, I don't know what I need to do when I leave here, but I gotta do something else.
Something else. It's like I just sat through seven terrible things to get to that one good one.
Like it's only coffee served here. What do I do with myself?
Come on.
I want to talk about the journey that led to you writing your book. And I know that we have many listeners that have dreams in their own hearts of wanting to write a book, and having experienced book writing on different levels for those of us who are authors too, there's all this journey that leads to what people actually hold in their hands. You know, sometimes the title comes first, sometimes the theme of maybe what you want to write. What was the journey like that led you to writing this book? And did you always feel in your heart that writing books was something you wanted to do?
Yes. So I will credit the seed with my mom. She used to get my brother and I journals very early, like in elementary school, and, you know, would encourage us to write poetry, to write our thoughts, to write solutions to world problems. So I've been writing early, and she is a writer. And a large part of my professional career, you know, as a professor and a researcher, has been academic writing. And academic writing is like the opposite of poetry, right? It is, can't for me, feels very restricted and very narrow. And so because I have really a heart for community, I have always had the desire to be able to create resources where people can get the information and it's not just like full of jargon. You know, a lot of my prior books are academic books that are used to train future psychologists. So because they're textbooks, they're very expensive. So I would never even tell members of the community about them because I'm not going to have them pay $65. So to be able to write something that most people can access for $20 is in alignment with my values. And the other piece that happened in terms of the pathway here is I started the Homecoming podcast about 3 years ago. And I started the podcast in the aftermath. So I post mental health quotes on social media, and people always write asking for more information because, you know, a tweet can only be a certain number of characters. So to deal with people having questions, I said, okay, let me do the podcast. The podcast is like 30-minute episodes. And then people write me after the episode with more questions. So, you know, it's like I could keep trying to email people back one at a time, or I could put all this in a resource and people could have it in their hands. And also, I was blessed that the publisher approved the audiobook as well for people who prefer to listen. And so it really came from wanting to share knowledge that it should not just be for the elite or for the wealthy, but, you know, that knowledge is power, knowledge is healing. And so that's why I wrote it.
I love that. I'm just always curious to hear about the journey to book writing, and even that you, for yourself as a writer, you've had these different genres of experience where you've written poetry, you've written academic work, and now writing something that is for the people, so to speak. Yes. You know, you're hoping that anyone can access that. I love that. There's so much to say that I loved about your book. First of all, I personally love that there are homework sections in this book because I didn't enjoy homework in school. But let me tell you, when I'm in a healing space, that kind of question asking and having different activities I can try to sort of process things, that is so helpful for me. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, I love that. You know, like that gives you something. Sometimes you can read something and you're taking it in, but especially some of what is in your book that you're really walking people through with some hard things that people may have experienced in life. So you can even read the chapter and then at the end of the chapter feel like, okay, well, I don't know what to do with myself or with these feelings or thoughts, you know? So talk to us more about what the process was of you deciding this book shouldn't just have sort of traditional chapters. It should also have these places for application.
Yes, absolutely. I personally, and then I have also witnessed and heard many people who will say like a podcast was moving, a sermon was moving, a book was moving, and nothing has changed, right? It was like an emotional high that did not translate in any way to our real lives or behavior. And that also shows up in therapy. You know, there are sometimes I will have clients who, and I think I even say this in the book, who hide behind the word confused, right? So they'll keep saying, I don't know, I'm confused, which is immobilizing, right? I never have to take action as long as I say, I don't know. So people can spend years in therapy talking about thinking about change. And, you know, at some point we have to either shift or be willing to tell yourself the truth that I have decided to stay where I am, you know, and I just had a client this past week who was kind of doing that, talking in circles. The week before had said they were going to change something. This week it was back to the normal. So I said, so your truth is you have decided to stay. Right. So we just have to get to that because no shift is also a choosing. Right. And it's a decision. Right. So let's own our lives. I think the importance of agency and empowerment is important. And I'm also aware, I think the significance of the homework is some people need the steps. I think sometimes people assume that everybody has access to the same information or knows what to do. But like you said, you come to that and say, well, that's interesting, but what do I do with that? So the practical part is important. That's why kind of my two phrases I often strive for within my work is inspiration and information, right? So yes, I want people to feel capable, right? Feel inspired to do it. But then like now, like what's something specific to do?
Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about, y'all, I'm just here with like 1,000 things. And I'm like, I only have a certain amount of time to talk to Dr. Tamer. Y'all know, you know, we're not here for 2 weeks where I can be like, anyways, girl, what about this? What about that? Okay. But let me ask you about this. One of the themes that you talked about in the book is the idea of disconnection. And I found that idea and the way you were, you know, helping the reader kind of unfold what that means. I found that idea so powerful on a lot of levels. We are here at the time of this recording, still currently in a pandemic, mm-hmm. while sort of feeling the tensions of decisions that may be made out of our control or decisions we have to make regarding how we still sort of try to air quotes move forward, even though we are mm-hmm. still currently here, right? And so it was really a powerful idea to me because I think the last 2 years of living through a pandemic, particularly speaking to those of us here in America, but really globally as well, right? There's a lot of disconnection that we either discovered because mm-hmm. of the pandemic and how that changed and switched our lives, or the pandemic itself, that experience, whether that was our change in work, our change in our family or social life, all these different ways that affected us. So I wanted to see if you can give a few of the signs. The rest of the signs are in the book, but I want to see if you can give a few of the signs. How can we recognize that we may be disconnected? Because mm-hmm. one of the things you're talking about there in the book is that we could really live our lives disconnected and not know or not mm-hmm. recognize, really. Mm-hmm. Can you talk more about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for that and for putting it in the context of the pandemic, because I think we still really fully haven't taken in what that means for us emotionally, psychologically, the cost and the impact. And, you know, a lot of people are just trying to go through the motions or business as usual. But it has been a major disconnection, a disconnection from other people and a disconnection from ourselves. So one of the signs that you're disconnected is when you're numb. So mm-hmm. when you don't feel anything one way or another, right? We see all of these deaths by the pandemic. We see all this racial injustice. You know, we see all of these political dynamics. If nothing moves you, then you're checked out. And we have all seen people and even experienced times in our lives where we were present, but not present. And so to be aware, like, when did I stop feeling? Mm. Right? When did I stop feeling is one of the warning signs. Another warning sign is when you remain in unfulfilling circumstances. Mm. So when I stay on a dead end job, when I stay in a dead relationship, it requires that I check out for myself. Mm. Like, there's no other way to do that. And so, you know, and I think I referenced it in the book, the person who was like at a job they hated, they complained about it all the time. And when I asked about other options, they literally said, well, I only have 10 more years till retirement. It's like a decade, like you're going to do this to yourself for a decade.
Right.
And, you know, I say that even with my knowledge of like poverty and classism and all of these things. But sometimes there are options. Sometimes we are not as stuck as we believe. And that is also being in unfulfilling relationships where people are more about counting the years than counting the joy. Whew. Oh, we did it. And it's like, but how? What's the quality of those years? What's the quality of that time? And so I would say if nothing really moves you anymore, or if you know you're in an unfulfilling place, you're probably disconnected and in need of a homecoming.
Yeah, a return. Oh, I love that. I mean, there's a lot of hearing that word, especially in Black community, really across diaspora, right? There's a lot of themes of that idea. I remember going to funerals growing up that were mm-hmm. referred to as mm-hmm. homegoing, right? Mm-hmm. And then yes. there's sort of like, you know, homecoming in my like Black college experience.
Right.
And there's
right.
also church homecoming when sort of
yes.
the preacher from your mama, your grandmama church would be like, y'all, I know y'all been out there ain't going to church. Come
right.
on back this one
come
weekend.
Home. Come on home.
You know? So just all the levels of that were present for me
yes.
too.
Yes. I love you raising that. It's one of those like cultural winks when like Chris Rock says he could say the same joke and like Black people hear one joke and white people hear a different joke. So it is like all of the cultural meanings of home for us, you know, thinking of community, thinking of identity, thinking of places of belonging, thinking of celebration, thinking about the collective process. You know, as a friend of mine said, actually, I think it was an interview for a podcast. They said, you know, do you think we need like a national homecoming?
Mm.
Yeah. And a part of this process is individual, but a part of it is the collective as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. When you were talking about the dead end relationships and how we can begin to count those by the years, it made mm-hmm. me think about that old In Living Color sketch, where it was like the older couple and they would say, but we still together. After they like fought and insulted
right.
each other and all these things, but we still together.
Still.
It's like, well, maybe we don't have to be
right.
if that's not what's working. Maybe we should talk about that.
Right. It's an important question of like how we measure success, because sometimes people are loyal to situations that are not loyal to them.
Right.
And, you know, it can be how I count success is endurance, but I am enduring with something that is breaking my spirit.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really healthy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so good. I want to talk a little bit about therapy, especially those who are new to therapy or considering therapy. I know here in this podcast, living room space, we've talked a lot about the power of therapy and the process of therapy and how it is good to be able to remove. In some of our communities, we have sort of a sense of shame if we find
yeah.
ourselves feeling like we need to see a professional, that we are beyond what our friends or our family can do to help us. So as a professor, as well as a psychologist yourself with a practice, what are the thoughts, tips, advice you would give to folks who are either new to therapy or who mm-hmm. are sort of on that teetering edge considering? They're thinking,
yes.
this is something I need, but they feel mm-hmm. apprehensions. What thoughts would you give to those folks?
Yeah, absolutely. I love the question, because it is important for us to know that we are deserving of healing space. We're deserving of spaces where we don't have to be on, where we don't have to perform, where we don't have to be the caretaker, mm. where we can receive. And so friendship and romantic relationships and family are all beautiful and have their place, but that is not the same thing as working through an issue with a trained professional. And so, yes, get auntie's advice, get your sister friend's advice, but then also get the strategies for the healing and the deprogramming and the shifting of your life. And a couple important things I would say. One is not every therapist is the same.
Hmm.
So the same way you would like shop around for a university or shop around for a church home, you know, you can shop around for a therapist. So just because you go to one session doesn't mean you all are going to hit it off. And if you don't hit it off, to not think, oh, I tried therapy, it doesn't work. Because therapists have different styles and different personalities.
Right.
So you just want to check in with yourself to say, like, what was it about it that I didn't like, so that I can know going forward? And so to be empowered about that, that you can ask questions, you know, think about the primary issues or challenges you want to work on, and then look at their website and see, do they make any reference to those things? Because they may be brilliant in something that's not your thing, right? If someone is an addiction specialist and you're coming there because you're tired of being single, they may not have that, right? Many people are generalists, but you want to think about what are the themes you want to work on, asking them if they've worked with people with those issues. And then if demographics are important to you, then you can look at that as well. Some people prefer younger, some people prefer older. Some people have preferences around gender or sexuality or race and ethnicity. And I will say, you know, if they are not your same demographic, to be comfortable and empowered asking them questions about that to see if it can still work, because there are times that it can. You would just have to feel that out, right? If there is a sense of home or safety there for you. One of the things that people often go in who have never been in therapy at the first session, they often want to say, how long is this going to take? And they're like, yeah, how long before I'm healed and transformed? And, you know, to that, I would say, unless you have a therapist that's working with a manual, we can't give you the exact number of weeks. Now, sometimes, let's say if you go to a college counseling center, each student is allowed 8 sessions and that's it for the school year. So then that's not necessarily 8 sessions and you're done, but 8 sessions and you're done. That's all they're going to give you. So there are some approaches that are, you know, like if I run a trauma recovery group, that's a set number of weeks. But in general, if I'm working with someone individually, I can't tell you in the beginning how long it's going to be. A part of the reason is because most of us don't come in the first session really revealing everything. So it continues to unpeel, some because you don't trust the person yet, some because of shame, and some it's not in your awareness, right? Sometimes we're not thinking about it. We didn't realize that we're still carrying that. And then something will happen in session that will remind you of like, oh, that's just like whatever that situation is. But you want to see like, what am I gaining from it? How do I feel when I'm there? And how do I feel when I leave? And what I do say to clients is, you know, some sessions are harder than others.
Right.
And it is different than friendship. Even for therapists, have to make this adjustment when I'm, you know, doing training for future therapists. Because when I'm talking to a friend, if like you're upset about something, like we're going to stay on the phone for hours till you're ready to hang up or we fall asleep, or I'm going to come over to your house and we're going to be there for hours. So therapy is generally an hour, which means, we're pressing pause. And so for some people, they can feel like, but wait, like I'm not done. It's not going to be done today, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
It's not going to be all finished today, but we're going to press pause, reflect on what came up in the hour. We'll continue it next time. So that sometimes is a part people have to adjust to.
These are such great tips, folks. I hope that y'all are listening to that. I know there are people listening right now who are like, I think it's time. I think I need, you know, so I'm hoping Dr. Tama was able to give you some things to help the process of going into therapy, especially if it's your first time, or it could be your first time in a long time, you know, that it's okay that you feel those fears or those nerves and all of that is normal and good. And it is possible to find someone that feels like a good fit for you. I love those tips you gave. I want to ask a few Dr. Tama questions. We're just going to get a slight personal moment here.
Yes.
I also gravitated to your book, Dr. Tama, because I love things that have the theme of home. I was a kid that grew up military. I experienced both branches of the military in one childhood, Air Force and Army. So I moved around a lot. And then I grew up to be a person that traveled a lot for work. So there's a lot of that just even in my creative work, that theme of sort of how we make home, how we find home, how we return to it. All those themes are always so interesting to me. So I would love if you can share with us, what is one place or one person who feels like home to you?
Yes. Yeah. So the example I want to give for this, I think is so important because it disrupts like these notions of women not getting along or women being competitors or petty or like all of these kind of sexist myths. I have a group called The Gathering, and it's a group of powerful women, and we meet monthly. And before the pandemic, we met at my house. And since the pandemic, we meet on Zoom. But the powerful thing, the enriching thing about this sisterhood circle is we, in the first hour, we would like eat and just kind of casually catch up. In the second hour, we each give like a reflection, like about 5 minutes. And what it allows is that not one person is the pouring one, or not one person has to be the strong one, like everybody receives. And so, yes, I'm going to share something, but then I'm getting something from everybody else in the circle. And it's simply that whole piece of iron sharpens iron. So a sisterhood circle is important where we don't have to be on, where I don't feel the weight of like, I am here carrying it all.
Yeah.
But really being peers and being sisters. And I definitely feel home the first Sundays of every month.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I love the sense of regularity. You know, I think there's something yes. really just stabilizing about that, as well as especially when I have friends. I mean, my mom is a nurse. I have friends who are nurses. I have friends who work in social work. I feel like particularly when you work in a cares sort of field or industry, you can not have a lot of places sometimes where you can go and also be poured into. And I loved that sort of collective, that there's no one person that has to have the encouraging word to say, you know, there's no pressure. You can just, whatever your reflection is. I love that, that like leveling of the emotional playing field in a way.
Right.
It's wonderful.
Right. Yeah. It's wonderful. I love it.
Now I got to ask you about food because it's important to me. So what food reminds you of home?
So the food that most reminds me of home is a food I cannot eat often, and that is homemade bread.
So good.
Yes.
So good. Just even the way it makes your house smell. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Make the way it smells, you're automatically like, yes.
Yes.
Is there a particular kind of homemade bread? Is it sourdough? Is it multigrain? What's it doing there? Or is it all the homemade bread?
All of it. All of it. You see my face. All of it.
I love that. We celebrate bread around here. We love bread. It's delicious. What is one thing that is bringing you joy right now, Dr. Tema?
I'm going to say my kids. They are such a delight, and two very different personalities. So it's just beautiful to see people as themselves. You know, we show up to the planet, you know, as our own little unique beings. So it's been it's a pleasure watching them and getting to know, you know, their just quirks and their spirit. And my daughter is a mini me, very studious and focused. And what I say to people is, my son came to teach me humility. He's a firecracker. And so when I just had my daughter, I could, you know, I just would say, you know, move over here, or, you know, not to talk loud, or, you know, whatever you say, she's going to do. And so I was like, parenting, right? Parenting is a piece of cake. Right. So then when my son is like, sit down, sit down, sit down, sit down. So I said, it has given me a lot more grace and compassion for myself and for other parents. But yeah, I enjoy them.
Oh, I love that. Dr. Tema, the people are listening. The people want to know where they can get this book so that they can begin their own journeys. The people want to know how they can stay connected to you and your work. Where would you tell the people to go?
Yes, absolutely. So my website is drtema.com, D-R-T-H-E-M-A. I would encourage you to get the Homecoming book, to listen to the Homecoming podcast, which is on all major platforms. We're up to like 140 some episodes, so go catch up. And I am in social media the most on Twitter and Instagram. In March, when the book came out, I joined TikTok. So I have a couple of videos there.
Come on, Dr.
Come
Tama.
Join me. Come on.
Come on and TikTok for the people. Y'all can return to yourselves on TikTok too.
Mm-hmm. Come on, for the people. Mm-hmm. For the people. That's mm-hmm. where the people are, the young people especially. So and get over there.
Oh, I love that. Oh, well, y'all remember these things, but even if you don't remember, you can go to the show notes, all the links to where you can get homecoming, where you can connect with Dr. Tama. We'll make sure all the links are there. Dr. Tama, this has been such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you for taking the time. And thank you for giving the people something that can help us along our healing journeys. Thank you for putting that work out into the world.
Oh, you are welcome. It's been delightful talking to you. And I'm just grateful for this space. Many blessings for you and for your listeners.
Her with Amina Brown is produced by Matt Owen for Soul Graffiti Productions as a part of the Seneca Women Podcast Network in partnership with iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.